Good morning to each of you who have come to critical thinking. Some of you were in my class on living with apologetics, and there's a little bit of an overlap here, but this is different. The focus is different. First thing I want to do is show you three overheads. Oh. That's better. That's an advertisement from the World Magazine. And this girl is standing there and she says, "What do I do about evolution?" She says, "I respect my college professors. I think they're thoughtful and intelligent, but they teach evolution like it's a fact. What's up with that? Sometimes I even wonder if it makes any difference whether or not I came from primordial soup, slop. Does it really matter what I believe?" Of course, that's an advertisement for this Worldview Academy. What could help this girl sort through that? Well, critical thinking. What do I do about socialism? In today's charged political climate of hope and change, different ideas vie for traction, especially in college. Your daughter will have to confront this question for herself. What do I believe? She may even wonder what difference freedom really makes in her life. Advertisement for the same place. What do I believe about Islam? Unfortunately, it's not dark enough for you to see, but there's a symbol in that blank spot. If you can look real close, you can see the crescent and the star. It doesn't come through very well. He says, after all the debates, blogs, talk shows, and opinions, your son will have to confront this question for himself. What do I believe? And again, critical thinking will help him. And you and I have been there and are there. Now, I'm 58, and I've had a little more chance with the passing of years to sort through some of those things than what you have. And my guess is that you're still in the process of sorting through what you believe, and that's okay. Well, if you're sorting through those things, guess what your students are doing? They're just getting started, and they have hardly any idea except what their parents taught them they ought to believe. Well, that's a great way to start. But you don't want to end up at my age, 58, believing what you're supposed to believe, and that's it. You need a whole lot more critical thinking at work to make you solid in your belief by the time you're 58. Here's the way it works. It's like three pieces of a puzzle, doesn't it? That might be where your students are in school. Now, puzzles are not made to be useful until they're put together, right? But you've got to start somewhere. Okay, when people start with puzzles, they start with edge pieces, right? And a corner. You'll notice that this is a corner piece, and these are edge pieces. Do you know that your children, your students, and yourselves probably got an advantage like that because somebody taught them what to believe and became a foundation from there? Do you know there are some poor children born in the world who have almost no pieces in any order anywhere? Great disadvantage. Well, the longer time goes, and this is part of what school is all about, we learn to put the pieces together. And lo and behold, as we put the pieces together, a picture begins to emerge that the more pieces we put in the puzzle, the more complete the picture is, and actually the easier it is to complete the puzzle, right? So take heart, young people, if you're just at the beginning and it doesn't seem to be too many pieces making sense yet. If you exercise some critical thinking and you believe in God and trust in His Word, eventually the pieces will fit together. And you will be able to end up with a puzzle that actually makes a picture. You'll notice that up here in the corner, there's still a piece missing. Because I don't think it's possible in this life to put the puzzle completely together. But if that was the last piece to put in, sure it would be easy, wouldn't it? But it's just not quite that way in the real world. Here's a tie-over from the session I had on apologetics. 1 Peter 3:15 is a central verse in apologetics. But sanctify the Lord God in your hearts, and be ready always to give an answer, an apologia, to every man that asketh you of a reason of the hope that's in you with meekness and fear. Okay, that fits what we're going to talk about today, but the next verse fits even better, where it says, prove all things, hold fast that which is good. To me, this is a divine mandate to do some critical thinking. We Christians are not blessed by God to sit there and just eat, drink, and be merry. We face real issues, and the scripture teaches us to prove all things. Think critically. Jesus says, you're the light of the world, let your light so shine before men. We're also the salt of the earth. Now, this thing of critical thinking, of course, is not about being negative and condemning of other people. Okay? If that's not what it is, would somebody give me a definition of what it actually is? How would you describe critical thinking? What's your definition? It's okay if you get it wrong.
Thinking clearly and logically.
Thinking clearly and logically. Yeah, I like that. Anything you want to add to that?
Thinking that is careful and precise.
That's right. Thinking as carefully and precisely as possible. What are we aiming at in this process? Against the moral standard, so that we come up with the truth. That's what this whole thing is about. We want to find out what's really true. As we talked about in the apologetics class yesterday, there's a bunch of stuff in evolution is just not true. For example, one kind reproduces after itself, right? It never changes into another kind. To say that one kind mutates into another kind is false. It's not true. Okay? And the fact that they say that something comes from nothing is not true. It's somebody's wishful thinking, but it's not true. It's impossible for God to lie, right? So is it fair to say that all truth is God's truth? Anything that's true comes from God. Is that okay to say? Some of us are not sure. Yeah, I think it is. And to me, if you get a hold of that concept, it's very liberating as you search and think and work critically with issues. If you can find out what is true, you're okay. Now, here's a problem. Sometimes what we think is true isn't actually true. And in that sense, we have to back up and hold ourselves and say, well, as far as I understand, this is true. Because after all, I'm not God, and I don't think you are either. So there's an element of humility in this whole thing. However, right there is the difference between ourselves and our worldly friends. What is true about evolutionists? Do they have that same kind of humility? Somebody tell us something we talked about yesterday that would illustrate the opposite of this. Yeah, they don't have a meek and quiet spirit. They have a brash, arrogance. And they say things like, it's like today's scientific inquiry is actually a threat to many of them. I mean, it's making them shake. For example, intelligent design. I mean, just plumb the laws of probability and mathematics say what we see in the world had to be designed. It couldn't just happen, okay? But the scientific community, the unbelieving scientific community say, well, look, we can't even accept this because it allows a divine foot in the door. Intelligent design. That reminds me of God. We may not have God in this picture, period. Is that thinking critically? Absolutely not. So they're following their fallen thought processes. They don't maintain humility. They're not really seeking after the truth. And as I said yesterday, there was this unbeliever talking with a believer, and the believer said to the unbeliever, if I could prove to you beyond a shadow of a doubt that God is real and that the Bible is true, would you believe? And he said, no. Why not? What would interfere with my lifestyle? People believe what they want to believe. Now, I got a challenge for us here. Do you know that's also true of us? It's hard for us to really do critical thinking. We have ourselves to protect and our own ideas. And it takes a lot of humility to really think critically and to be honest about issues. And our fallen human nature is very given to pride. And before we know it, we're talking through our hats and we think we have the truth when we don't. So let's keep that in mind. Well, I'm going to introduce you to how many of you are familiar with the Critical Thinking Company? Okay. I think I'll pass these out. I called these people up and told them I'm having this little workshop, and I was wondering if they would mind if I would have a catalog for every one of you, and they said, great. And they have two kinds, one for homeschoolers and one for teachers. And so I got 15 of each. They're basically the same. The format's a little different. But I want you to take one of these, and you can use it however you want. One of the things I want you to think about is they have a website down here, criticalthinking.com, that you can go to, and I'm going to share some things with you from that. This is an incredible resource. This whole company deals with critical thinking at all levels. So let's pass those out. I think we have enough for everybody. And if you would rather have one or the other, I think this is for the school teachers. Yeah, I think so. And this is for the homeschoolers. Pass these down through. And there'll be more coming around over here. It really doesn't matter. They're basically the same content. One is just aimed at homeschool versus school. If you really want to shuffle, you may afterwards. Pass that back. Okay, I looked up this website, and here's what they say critical thinking is. Critical thinking is the identification and evaluation of evidence to guide decision making. A critical thinker uses broad, in-depth analysis of evidence to make decisions and communicate his or her beliefs clearly and accurately. Hi, would you like to help me? tell you what, why don't we sit you right over here like this? Okay. Another definition here, critical thinking is reasonable, reflective thinking that's focused on deciding what to believe and do. And then there's another statement here. A superstream concept of conception of critical thinking has these 11 statements about it. Is open-minded and mindful of alternatives, tries to be well-informed, judges well the credibility of sources, identifies conclusions, reasons, and assumptions, judges well the quality of an argument, including the acceptability of its reasons, assumptions, and evidence, can well develop and defend a reasonable position, asks appropriate clarifying questions, formulates plausible hypotheses, plans experiments well, defines terms in a way appropriate for the context, draws conclusions when warranted but with caution, and integrates all items in this list with deciding what to do or believe. Wow, that's a mouthful. We could spend a long time on this. This is supposed to be basically an overview. And so I could bore you and go into detail on all that, but I don't think I should do that right now. Let me go on to another page. Here it says, another page, why teach critical thinking skills? I like what they say here. You can find this all yourself. You don't even have to take notes of this. If you go to criticalthinking.com, he's helping me. Here's what they say. If we teach children everything we know, their knowledge is limited to ours. If we teach children to think, their knowledge is limitless. Did you know that a teacher's job is to work himself out of a job? Really and truly, that's our job, to teach our students how to think so they can go on their own. You don't want your students tied to you all through life, do they? Do you? That wouldn't even be nice, would it? Going on, our ability to succeed in life is directly proportional to our ability to solve the problems we encounter along life's journey. Tragically, elementary and secondary education is mostly memorization. The biggest problem facing educators today is the inability of most students to think analytically. Educators and parents commonly see the following list of academic problems which are directly related to a child's ability to think. And it has a whole list of things. And I don't think you want me to get bogged down in that. And then here's another one. Guide to inductive and deductive reasoning. Can you tell me what those are? Do you have any idea? It's okay if you get it wrong. What's inductive reasoning? You do it, maybe you just don't know what it's called. Yes?
Can't we just wait for one starts with the big picture, go down to details, one starts with the details?
Exactly right. Now, someone put the proper labels on there. Which is what? Which starts with a big picture and goes down to the details? That's deductive reasoning. Okay? And of course, then if you start with the details and finally make some kind of generalization, that's inductive. Okay, very good. Okay, and there's a lot of illustrations. And these, you can buy material to help you with inductive reasoning, exercises in that, or with deductive reasoning. Here's another one on the same website, how to promote critical thinking in your classroom. Now, wouldn't you like to read all that? I would bore you if I would read all this to you. I think it's extremely relevant. Here's another one. How did you arrive at the correct answer? And so on. I'll just leave that. Well, thank God in our generation we have some tools to use. And whatever time we have at the end, we would like to actually spend time doing some critical thinking with some exercises, if I can get myself shut up early enough. So by this time, I think you understand that critical thinking is good, but it's not infallible, okay? And we gave you one biblical reference. What was that reference that would give us admonition to do critical thinking? What was it?
Prove all things
and hold fast to that which is good. Now, if you look at the Old Testament, when God sent prophets to his people, a lot of that was an effort to get his people to do some critical thinking, like Isaiah and Jeremiah. Did God's people enter into critical thinking with the prophets? What did they finally do? I mean, when prophets tell the truth, it's embarrassing. So historically, what do people do about truth bearers? They get rid of them. They kill some of them, but they don't get them all killed. God said he's going to keep Jeremiah alive. He says, I'm going to give your life a prey to you. They really wanted to kill him, but God kept him alive. Okay, now do you see the implications of this? If you're really honest and you do critical thinking honestly and with humility, you're going to get yourselves into trouble with somebody, somewhere. Except God. I'll just tell you this right now. I'm from Texas, and I moved to northern Indiana, and I'm teaching school up there. And when you have a huge Anabaptist community like that, it's been there for generations, I find huge resistance to critical thinking. It's like I got up there and I discovered they have a little circle of horizon like that, and don't you dare scratch that. Like, this is just the way we do. I don't want to think critically. Who do you think you are, you stranger? Well, that's just the price I have to pay. That's okay. And my guess is that some of you in your situations, you might have similar prices to pay. But that's okay. That's always the way God's prophets have faced it. Now, I know that the human tendency is to say, okay, if you don't want it, I'm out of here. Did God let his prophets off that easy? No. You got to stay right there. I remember one minister telling me, some of you might know him, Aaron Shank, when he moved from Virginia to Pennsylvania, and he was ordained. He says, I preached to the wall for 10 years before people really began to take him seriously. Right, that's Old Testament prophets. What did Apostle Paul do regularly every Sabbath day for a while? What did he do? Where did he go?
Synagogue.
Into the synagogue for what purpose? To reason with the Jews. And I think that involved critical thinking. Did they hear him? Some of them did. Some of them didn't. And that's just the way it is. Some do and some don't. Jesus himself used critical thinking when he made statements like this. If God so clothes the grass of the field, will he not much more clothe you, O ye of little faith? That's a simple inference. That's critical thinking. The book of Romans is almost one long discourse in logic, proving one point after another. And why in the world did God decide he needs to give us four gospels? Wouldn't one of them been okay? What is the gospel? Don't give me a definition. I just want you to tell me what it is. This is not a trick question.
Story of the life and ministry of Jesus.
Exactly. That's what it is. Why did he give us? Why did God give us four of those? And did you ever notice that there's some details that differ from one gospel to another? Why? Isn't that a contradiction? You have any ideas on that? Did you know that if you took a case to a court and several witnesses said exactly the same thing, that the argument would be suspect? It would be considered framed. Do the four Gospels give the essential details the same? Yes. Are the details differing? Yes. That difference in details just happens to deal with the different perceptions that were in the minds of the writers. For example, here we are sitting in this class. If after this class was over, we got all of you to write about this class, would all of you write the very same thing? Well, of course not. Because your perceptions are different. Okay, well, God gave us four perceptions. And actually adds to the credibility. Adds to the credibility. And God could have just given us two, because in the mouth of two or three witnesses, every word's established, right? But he gave us three, and didn't even stop at three. He gave us four. And the most incredible and incredulous act of the New Testament is the resurrection of Christ. How many people witnessed that? Was it just 11? This is not a trick question.
There was 500 just on him.
Oh, at one place, over 500 people saw him. So if one person was seen the risen Christ, could that report be suspect? If two? Yeah, it still could be, because two could have collaborated. What about three? It's less and less every more person you get, right? But when you have that kind of number, and basically what it turns out, the Christian story is one of the, it has some of the very best evidence of all history. It is so well documented. God went to extreme lengths to make sure that nobody could disbelieve him. Now, question for you. Does that settle the issue for people? Does everybody believe the gospel? No. Why don't they? It's not that hard. Let people believe what they want to. They don't want to believe this. They don't want to exercise critical thinking. Let that not be true of any of us, okay? Who do we hurt if we don't exercise ourselves in critical thinking? Ourselves. When Jesus walked with the two on the road to Emmaus, he asked, "Ought not Christ to have suffered these things and entered into his glory?" And beginning at Moses and all the prophets, he expounded to them in all the scriptures the things concerning himself. He led them in critical thinking. You know what I think would be extremely interesting and extremely dangerous at the same time? If we would invite Jesus to come and preach for us. If you and your home church would invite Jesus to stand up here and preach to you, that would be extremely interesting and extremely dangerous at the very same time. Did Jesus pull any punches when he taught? Was Jesus willing to expose any hypocrisy when he saw it? Mm-hmm. Now, anybody who's in the business of hiding would find Jesus' teaching extremely threatening. But if you have open and you have a critical thinking heart and a humble attitude, well, that'd be great. Think in your own heart, if you'd like to have coffee with Jesus tomorrow morning, sit across the table with him, if you can honestly say, "I would love that," you're in great shape. If you think, "May I bring a friend?" Or if you find some kind of resistance, then you might want to just deal with your own heart a little bit. All right. Now, I talked to you about, we have to be careful we don't hold this thing too high. Let me say a few things about that. The world worships the human mind and believes that by thinking critically, using the scientific method, man can eventually solve all his own problems. Do you teach a scientific method in your school? I think you ought to. It's an exercise in critical thinking. What is a scientific method? Can you give me the steps of a scientific method? What's the first thing? Okay, you raise a question. Then what? Before we get there yet, the question has to be precise. We have to know the definition of all the words. We have to know exactly what we're saying so we know exactly what we're looking for. Okay? Then once we have the definitions of the words, then we ask a question or make something to search for. That's the third thing. And then we begin to do tests. Observable tests. Experiments that test this statement. And then we form a hypothesis from this. But we keep testing and testing and testing to see that there's no variation to this. All right, that's quite rigorous. But you know, it's that method that brought us to the standard of living where we are today. Science has used the scientific method over and over and over again. It's a valid method in the natural world, although it has its shortcomings when it comes to spiritual things. Can you measure degrees and weight? For example, how much humility we have? Can you measure that? So it falls short when it comes to spiritual things. It fits in the natural world. Okay. So the human mind has suffered from the fall and cannot be depended upon for sound and solid answers completely. In the natural sciences, yes. But there are pseudosciences. And what are the pseudosciences? Let's talk about that. You can measure things in biology, right? And zoology and mathematics is exact and all that. What are some of the things that are not exact? Areas of study that you just have to be humble about. They're called pseudosciences. Now, the world would like to put them into the pure sciences, but it's not. What's one? Psychology is one. It's a study of the human mind. Can you measure things up here? Not really. They try. They do studies, but it's not exact. And so psychology is a pseudoscience. Sociology is another pseudoscience. Anthropology. Even a natural science like astronomy. When you get out there to things that are a theory and not testable, then you get into pseudoscience, even in a natural science. Recently, I purchased a book that had a brief review of 100 philosophers. Do you think those 100 philosophers all said the same thing? No, every one of those 100 philosophers said something different. And it's based upon what they took in. You know, we are what we eat. You know, Matthew sitting right here, is his physical body that you see is the result of his eating meat and potatoes and bread and cookies. And that has really become him, okay? Same thing is true for all of us. That's our physical bodies. But we are who we are as persons also in terms of what we experience. Now, Laverne here is not the very same person as this brother. Not only in his physical body, but who he is as a person, because he's a Canadian. You're not a Canadian, are you? Oh, got the wrong illustration. All right, well, we'll take these two. Because these two have more similarities because they're Canadians than these two would have. We are what we experience. And by coming to Faith Builders Teachers Week, you have chosen something to come into your experience. So we are what we experience. But God is not. God simply is. He does not learn because he is infinite in knowledge and wisdom. He interacts with his creation and delights to do so. And he invites humans to learn to think the way he thinks. And thinking the way God thinks includes critical thinking. And that's why we use critical thinking, to learn to think the way God thinks. Did you ever think about this? God must have had so much fun on Creation Week. It just boggles your mind. Now, just take a flower. Take a rose. Now, I don't think God spent 16 hours designing a rose. But what went on in the mind of God to create a rose? I don't know. But whenever we study a rose like that, we have to tear it apart and analyze it piece by piece. And the more we tear apart and understand how this all is, the more we follow God's thoughts. And we end up saying, wow. Do you know that just in your lifetime, people have been able to break they have been able to map a gene. In your lifetime. They have not been able to do that in all history. Well, God knew that all the time. But by mapping a gene, all people did is just finally got God's thoughts in order. So that now we can think God's thoughts after him. And it boggles our minds. And people, even evolutionary scientists say, wow, this is incredible. Who could have ever done this? The only thing you can't say is it must be God. Do you know what is so delightful about being a school teacher? Is you get to get little children to learn to think God's thoughts. Think like God thinks. I think that's fun. Okay, Randall, why should you teach algebra in your school?
Get children to think God's thoughts.
Mm-hmm. Good answer, Randall. God thinks algebra? Does he? Yes, absolutely he does. But what is beyond that? What's another reason for studying algebra? What is algebra really a study of? This is not a trick question. Pardon? Exactly. It teaches why arithmetic works the way it does. It's a study in logic. Is God logical? Absolutely he is. In the beginning was the Word. And that word is logos. Where do you think logic, the word logic, comes from? Logos. In the beginning was the Word, logos, and the logos was with God, and the logos was God. God is logic. Wow. Yeah, wow. Well, herein lies an important truth that divides worldly thinking from Christian thinking. Christians begin with the premise of God's revealed truth of Scriptures, and critical thinking starts there, and everything is measured by what the Scriptures say. The Scriptures are the ultimate authority, and we call them special revelation. I'm going to have to hasten on and drop some things here. Won't comment any further on that. But as I said in the class yesterday on apologetics, Christians have a second book. In addition to divine revelation, we have general revelation. Nature out there. And Romans 8, Romans 1, 18 to 23 talks about that. It says in 21, for since the creation of the world, his invisible attributes are clearly seen, being understood by the things that are made. I mean, just give an illustration. The sun shining out there, I don't think it's very bright, but if it was bright, and you walk out that door and you look up, what do you see? This is not a trick question.
Blue sky and sun.
What is that blue sky? It's eternity, isn't it? Can you see the end? You look into eternity just by looking up. The things that are invisible in God are revealed by the natural world. And that's just one illustration. We learn so much about God by studying his natural world. Even his eternal power and Godhead, so that they are without excuse. By working carefully with the scientific method in the context of the second book, science has discovered so many truths about the natural world. Technology took it from there, and we have a much higher standard of living along with advances in medicine that we all benefit from. I want to say the next statement with all due respect. The Amish people limit themselves sharply with critical thinking. Thus, tradition, family, and community values take priority over critical thinking in their church life. But they do use critical thinking in their business life. And as I told you, I'm in the midst of this large Old Order Amish community, and I see that. Now, that's their choice. They have some values, because sometimes this critical thinking has gone to the English people's heads, and they do things that are really weird. And you know what? The Amish people, by limiting some of their critical thinking, are now becoming like the rest of the world, saying, wow. Dallas Morning News a couple years ago had a headline that says, "Public Craves Amish Lifestyle." In the midst of all this critical thinking that the English people have done, and all the advancements that they have done, their families are breaking apart, they can't have their finances together, morality's breaking down, and they look at the Amish people and they say, integrity. Wow! I want to go there. I want to see it for myself. I want to get close to it. I can't be in it, but I want to get close to it and feel what integrity feels like. There's a book out entitled Amish Peace, where the author says, we cannot be Amish ourselves, but we can learn from them to get a little bit of this for ourselves. One of the biggest things that I have to deal with in my school is people looking down on Amish people and despising them. And that was really a jolt to me. People pay to come to our community to look at these people. Why in the world are you folks despising them? Now, why am I telling you all this? I guess I'm telling you this is that we must not worship critical thinking. It has its limitations. And the Amish people have cut it off at a level I personally don't feel comfortable with. But there's some wisdom showing up in all this in spite of that. In conclusion here, I'm going to be real frank. I'm afraid that far too few of us today operate with the higher levels of thinking. And this deficiency helps us understand why education itself is not valued as highly as it should be by many. And for that reason, school has become a necessary evil rather than an investment opportunity for the future. Think about these illustrations of no critical thinking. Ask yourself, are these a basis for making judgment on issues? This is the way we've always done it. I feel this way about the matter. Look, folks, does it really matter what I think? When we're dealing with critical thinking here, what really matters if we're trying to find truth? Matthew. What is true? What does God think? And I hear people entering into decision making, well, I think this and I think that, and somebody else thinks a third thing. Well, so what? It doesn't matter what I think. It doesn't really matter what you think. It matters what God thinks. Okay? What about this? I want to do it this way. Somebody else says, I want to do it that way. Somebody else says, I want to do it a third way. What do you have soon? You have chaos. As a result of no critical thinking. Did you ever hear students say things like this? I hate writing poetry. Or I hate singing. Or I hate talking in front of other people. Well, so what? That doesn't mean anything. Should students learn to talk in front of other people? Absolutely. It doesn't matter if you do hate it or not. And it doesn't matter if you don't like to write poetry. You should at least try. But people make judgments, especially boys and girls. I don't want to do this. And so therefore, that means a teacher should not make them do that. Baloney. Somebody says, I'm tired of doing it this way. Let's do it this way for a change. Okay, I guess you're allowed to do that. But that's really not a basis for making a decision. Or, I don't want to do it the way Laverne does it. If he's for it, I'm against it. That is stupidity. But people operate that way. Sometimes people make judgments based on things like this. Well, it's not exciting enough. We want to do something that's more exciting. I'm sorry. Exciting has nothing to do with it. It has to do, the real issue is whether it's true or not, whether it's the way God thinks or not. Or you've probably heard this one in these days. That's a cool idea. So we ought to do it because it's cool. Well, so what is cool? If God doesn't think it's cool, it really doesn't amount to too much cool. Or, in our postmodern world, and this is really relevant now, do you know that postmodernism says that on an individual level, Jonathan creates his reality, Matthew creates his reality, everybody creates their own reality. Okay? On a group level, if we all would decide on something and we vote on it, well, it must be true because we made this, we voted on and agreed. We've created our truth. Is that true? No, it's not true, but it's happening among our people right now. I challenge you to stand up for that when you get home and you see people who make judgments and decide it's true because we decided it. You will probably get your head chopped off because we are buying into too much of this concept. I'm looking forward to the fetal pig dissection here later on today, but I could just imagine if I went back to my school and we did this, that some of the girls would say, oh, that's disgusting. Like, I would never want to do that. Well, might it be disgusting? Well, yeah. Does that make the, is that a reason why you should never do a fetal pig dissection? No. If you want to learn what the insides of an animal looks like, you got to do it, whether it's disgusting or not. Or have you ever heard this for a basis of decision? What makes me feel better than such and such? Well, how I feel about it really isn't the issue. It's how God feels about it that's the issue. Or things like, we don't do it that way around here. Or here's the last one. It's cheaper this way. As if that makes truth. Oh, I think God must have an awful good sense of humor and an awful lot of patience when he sits up in heaven and watches the workings of the children of men and he sees them making decisions based on this kind of thing. He's incredibly patient with people. Okay, I just have this terrible problem of talking too much. You see those papers that I gave you? They are illustrations that I've copied out of books like this, Logical Puzzles for Kids. You can do these in the morning Rayaf devotions before you start your class for the day, just as a human interest kind of thing. Just give them a sheet, or double-sided sheet, puzzles, where they can solve on their own. It teaches them critical thinking. Or building thinking skills. Levels 2 and level 3. This one's for grades 4 to 6, and this one is grades 7 to 12. Whole books, and the answers are in the back. These are wonderful things to have. I mean, these are, you can copy out of these. They're reproducible. You can find them in your catalogs there. Here's a new one, balance benders. If I would have had time, I have some sheets copied right here. In fact, now while I'm talking about these other things, pass these around. You might enjoy those. Reading Detective. That one's for grades 7 through 8. Here is a book, Critical Thinking Book 1 and Critical Thinking Book 2. We started this. We did this in our church. We spent some time in doing critical thinking, taken right from this book. Here's the book 2. Some of this kind of expensive, but I think it's worth it myself. I would have loved to work through some of this stuff, but you can look through these pages and do them on your own. Let me, before I shut up, ask you to turn to the very first page here of Bloom's Taxonomy. Now, these are 6 levels of questions. Grades 1 to 4, the grammar level, basically deals with the remembering kinds of questions. The logic stage, or grades all the way from 1 to 8, goes the first 3, remembering, understanding, and applying. And that's about as far as you get in 8th grade, up to the third level. But analyzing, evaluating, and creating are high school. But high school, of course, includes everything. Now, here's the problem in high school. Are you listening, high school teachers? It's very easy to focus and deal with our students down here on the remembering level and not to spend enough time on thinking on higher levels. It's even true down here. We've got to make effort because the natural tendency is to sink on this thing, do the bottom levels. On the very last page that you have here, it has to do with analyzing. I'm not very gifted. I'm a more of a right brain kind of person. Left brainers, I would be embarrassed to kind of lead you through this thinking because I don't think very sharply. You folks are probably, your left brainers are a lot sharper than I would be. But these are excellent kind of thoughts. I mean, I had to sit there and labor to get this stuff. It's good for me. That's how weak I am on that kind of thing. Okay. If you would like some more puzzles, I do have one more here, and I'll shut up with this. Pass these around. Well, I'll give you everything here. Pass those around. Just do them on your own. If you want to know what the right answers are, come to me. I have the answers, and we can see whether you've got them. Thank you very much for your attention. You're excused.
For more free resources that support teaching and learning, visit thedocforlearning.org.